And that's, like I said, nothing's really changed. I've never felt that I have to sound or write any particular way. And why No Means No had so many strange songs in that respect. It was like drawing from all these sources and all these, not disciplines, but styles maybe. And then they all get pumped out in this sort of intense, loud, aggressive, sometimes, but not always, way. And punk rock was the milieu in which we were absorbed in. And these were the people that were open to hearing stuff like that.
Today on the show, we are joined with punk rock legend John Wright of No Means No and his current project, Dead Bob. We are celebrating with him 40 plus years of music making in the punk scene and still going strong with Dead Bob, who just released a brand new album titled Life Like. And around hearing about him bringing this album to life, we take a deep dive into the past, learn about the Canadian punk scene in the 70s and 80s, why him and No Means No are blacklisted from Belarus, and how some countries see punk as dangerous overseas, his perspective nowadays on the No Means No People's Choice album cover, as well as some advice for some aspiring bands who want to play the long game like he did. And with that being said, let's get right into it. Actually, like, super excited to talk to you, even beyond music. We talked to all sorts of creatives in this space about just life and perception and experience, and you have like such a crazy awesome legacy of just in not only the punk scene but the Canadian punk scene. And even I'm just super curious, like, even just knowing back in the day, like starting off with like No Means No, like I feel like a lot of like the history I learned growing up of the punk scene was either American or UK. And I just kind of want to know, like, how did you end up like falling into this in Canada? And like, what was it like around like the punk scene in Canada?
Well, of course, that's where we were born from here. Mm-hmm. Out Coast in Victoria, where we got ourselves started. And Victoria, I don't know if you've ever been out west and to Victoria, and it's like a quaint little colonial town. A hotbed for punk rock in that respect, being sort of frustrated suburban white music of the late 70s, whatever, I don't know. But it spawned a lot of great music. And like most scenes back in those days, you know, you're talking, you know, DOA coming out from Vancouver in 78, 79, Subhumans and whatnot, those kind of seminal years. It was very small and fun. I mean, it was one of those things where you felt you were kind of in a secret club of incredible music that people didn't have any understanding of and didn't know about. Mm-hmm. And of course, back in those days, information doesn't travel, you know, it's like it does now. So nothing stays new and fresh very long anymore. But there it takes years for things to develop. But that's kind of what bands need too. So, you know, we had a great, fertile ground as far as punk rock was concerned. I mean, you know, in punk rock, like, you know, of course, I mean, we were never like, you know, having mohawks and studs and all that sort of thing. We didn't look the look. Certainly there were people that were adopting the fashion of the day, but what it was is just people going, it's kind of do it yourself, be yourself. Didn't matter if you could rip those guitar solos. There was no shame and no pressure. I mean, the rock and roll and jazz scene and stuff, music scene in those days, I don't know what it's like for young people now, but it was very, you know, like there was these high bars that you were expected to be able to cross or you weren't taken seriously. Yeah. And so it just fostered a great little community, like a lot of punk rock scenes everywhere, and produced a lot of music. So, I mean, small towns in Canada, small towns all around the world, really. Well, maybe the world is a big place at that time for punk rock, but a lot of these little towns in the States, and for instance, producing great, great music. So that's where we came from. And when we started venturing west, or I should say east from Victoria, of course, you know, you're in Canada, but fast forward, like so many Canadian artists, you have to get out of Canada for anybody to get to know who you are.
Yeah, that was gonna be my follow-up question.
Yeah, like Canadians do in some ways really embrace their own culture, but in other ways they don't at all. It's like if you haven't gone out to the States, or in our case, it wasn't until we made it to Europe in 1988 and started touring over there that people like, oh, well, I guess they're a real thing. They're an actual band, and you know, you suddenly have some legitimacy. And that's kind of, I don't know, you hear that a lot from
Yeah,
Canadian
yeah.
artists, that they need to go to the States if they want to get any sort of renown. I mean, they might in Canada, but also Canada is a very small market. So if you're trying to sell records, if you're trying to make money, it certainly can be done. But you know, there's 10 times more people south of that line, and 20 more times that if you go to Western Europe at that time. Anyway, Western Europe, now it's pretty much all of Europe, except perhaps not past the Ukrainian border at the moment, but
Yeah,
or
facts.
Belarus. You know, we're on a blacklist in Belarus. I
Oh,
found
are
out,
you?
yeah, I found out late in the 2000s that we never went to Belarus, but we found out, hey, you wouldn't be able to go anyway. You're on the list.
Oh shit! Is it just from the content of No Means No? Like they think you're
First of
dangerous?
punk rock, there was lots of bands on the list that weren't going to get across that border.
Yeah.
It was
Well, that's kind
subversive.
of cool. Like your band
Well, yeah,
somewhere.
I mean,
What's more
there's
punk rock than that, you know? Getting banned from like a country.
well, but the problem is, of course, we crossed over in 88, played in Poland and in Hungary and Yugoslavia before the wall came down, and there's just so many wonderful folks there, and just, you know, we were just embraced because they were like, there's the music. They're passing cassette tapes around, literally cassette tapes getting re-recorded 20, 30, 40 times and mailed to their friends in different towns. And this is how they were listening to punk rock from the West. And so when bands were getting over the borders and playing shows, it was like, it was very important to these people. And it was kind of an adventure for me. It's like, well, it's an adventure, but it was also very eye-opening. And you know, you cross over and going to Ljubljana for the first time, and there's like almost no lights on, and certainly nothing happening. And you know, Prague was the darkest, blackest city that I'd ever seen. I mean, it's incredible. It was so gothic, you know, but not a sketch of paint anywhere, but vibrant with people super excited to about the arts and about punk rock. Poland, same thing. And so it was really interesting. And Belarus would be like, yeah, well, I feel badly, you know, because I know there'd be lots of folks who'd be super excited for not only
Sure.
us, but a lot of other bands to cross that border and play. But not going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. And I'm sure it's like makes like people who are in that country extra intrigued to see you because it's like almost like a taboo type thing. It's just
Yeah,
like,
totally. Totally. It's
yeah.
that's what it was. It's really this pent up excitement. And of course, you know, these people also grown up in the very rigid socialist societies, and brutal. I have a
Yeah.
good friend now that who was the first to put us on in Wrocław in Poland. And he was a, you know, a young kid, punk rocker. This is just, you know, at the end of the 80s. Getting to the point where all the communist stuff was collapsing around them, because it was just completely unsustainable. And you know, Poland had no economy except for the black market. I mean, these were actually totally dysfunctional countries. Well, they functioned just fine when the people just did it themselves, right? So yeah, he was, you know, the he was wearing his leather jacket and kind of being a punk rocker, and you know, he was taken into the police station and said, you either don't dress like that or your dad's going to lose his job.
Oh, holy fuck. That's insane. Yeah.
So this is kind of authoritarian socialist system they were living in. Whatever socialist capital, whatever label you want, it doesn't matter. It's just totalitarian. It was like rigid authoritarian society run by people just pocketing, living the good life while everyone around them was not allowed to. So, and I've still known until today. In fact, his record label in Poland is the only other place that's put out Dead Bob, my new band, Dead Bob.
Oh, amazing.
The album Lifelike. It was released on CD in Poland because he was like, hey, can I put out 300 CDs for Poland? Sure.
Oh, amazing.
These people we met and experiences we had, for instance, Arik has spanned the rest of my life. I don't see him all the time. I haven't seen him for quite a few years, but, those experiences, those early experiences were pretty amazing.
Yeah. That's such like an amazing perspective you have too, like just seeing different countries and the way they like kind of handle like music and arts and everything. And you did mention Dead Bod too, which I'm really excited to talk to you about too, because I just think it's so cool that, I don't know, just in life you found your thing and cut like 40 years later, you're still doing it at like such a high level and the creativity is there, you know. It's just like this gotta like run through your blood like nonstop, like, and it's just super cool and the release is awesome.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, I don't do anything differently now than I did when I was 18 years old in that respect. You know, it's like the way I approach music and like I said, when I mentioned earlier, punk rock was just this big blank palette, just fill it up. You know, and I, at no point did I feel pressure that I have to be like this band or be like that band, although I am constantly all the time. Party of One, that's my Rosillo's song, you know, and it's like we were, of course, heavily influenced by lots of music and that comes through. But it's the wide variety of music that makes the olio, the stew unique. Right. So, I got out of music. My brother more or less retired around 2015 in there. And I got involved with things. I live out on the West Coast, up at the end of the road, on the Sunshine Coast, literally the end of the road.
The edge of the earth.
Yeah, you can't drive any further up the coast of North America than here. This is it, on the mainland. The other end of the road is Tierra del Fuego. You can't go any further south down there on the same road. But I got involved in some other things up here. I got involved with a pub that didn't survive the COVID and the war and all the difficulties that businesses, small business restaurants, pubs or nightclubs, music is going through right at the moment. But I never got out of writing music and being a bit creative. I mean, it was kind of on hold. So Dead Bob was kind of reaching back into a lot of old demos, a lot of old songs. White Stone Eyes was a collaboration of my brother and I. Not as you hear it on the record, but it was something that those words and the riffs were ideas back when we were recording No Means No One maybe even before that, late 90s. A song that's just been hanging around forever and never got done. And I was, when I moved up here, I was picking away at some of these old demos. And so when COVID came around and everything kind of came to a halt, I had suddenly time on my hands, like so many other people. The pub was down to nothing, right? So I just started revisiting a lot of this old songs and putting actual real drums. A lot of my demos were program drums or loops and stuff, and started replacing all that. And just starting to build up this archive. And I literally got about three albums worth of music, and all in various stages of completion. But Lifelike was kind of the first, okay, these are the nine songs I can and want to finish and put together and self-release. And There was no thought of being a band. It was no plan.
Yeah, I'm glad you revisited these old demos and stuff and hashed them out, because again, like, it's just such a great album too, and such like a cool, like, interesting listen. I find, like, just something about it, like, is very engaging, and I wouldn't say it sounds like System of a Down, but I'm a big fan of that band because of, like, all the time changes, and maybe, like, you'll have, like, a melodic part and then it'll get, like, real heavy, and I think that's just, like, a really cool way to express yourself, and it feels like it's just authentic and not forced as well.
Well, yeah, and that's, like I said, nothing's really changed. I've never felt that I have to sound or write any particular way, and why No Means No had so many strange songs in that respect. It was like drawing from all these sources and all these, not disciplines, but styles maybe. And then they all get pumped out in this sort of intense, loud, aggressive, sometimes, but not always, way. And punk rock was the milieu in which we were absorbed in. And these were the people that were open to hearing stuff like that. I mean, punk rock's gone through a lot of different phases and became rather compartmentalized over the 80s and into the 90s. But for me, the way I approach music is pretty much open-ended. The songs dictate to me how they should be in the end. You know, am I going to do a country and western song? Probably not, but if something came up that's like, I love that. like our song Now from 0 + 2 = 1. It's not a punk rock song at all. But it has the ethos, maybe. I don't know. I don't know how to describe it. It has the
energy. Almost like an aura to it. Yeah. Energy's a good word too.
It fits right in. In my opinion, I mean, other people may disagree, but so yeah, there's Dead Bob is kind of just the legacy of No Means No is there, and for sure, there's two No Means No songs pretty much on it, in the sense that White Stone Eyes is my brother's text and my music, which is how so many of our songs were. I didn't write a lot of text, so there's lots and lots of collaborations that my brother is putting words and singing to music that I've written. And then Lifelike, of course, is a cover of a No Means No song, which was entirely, there was no plan. Like I said, I loved that song. I thought it was one of our best collaborations. And it came out with Dance of the Headless Bourgeoisie, but kind of just immediately got lost. It was a bonus. It was an extra track on the double vinyl. We played it live a couple times. It never really went anywhere live. And I always thought we were the wrong band for that song. I really liked the song, but the three-piece, Tom, Rob, and I weren't the right band for that song, in my opinion. And I just did it as for my own vanity project. Oh, I found the old demo, and this is much more of a pop song. So I just went ahead and did that, and I really liked it, and it ended up on the album.
Cool. I love just kind of hearing you talk about, like, creating all this music too. And you did mention that you might have enough for two more albums as well. And I think that's very special when you can find this wave and kind of, like, lock in and get in that zone, because what you're doing is, like, really awesome. And I also wanted to ask, like, you ever go back and look at the cover of No Means No, People's Choice, and laugh 20 years later?
I laugh because I was like 35 when that.
Yeah, and for context of people who never seen it, it's basically just writing on the bathroom wall, like give it up, granddads, and that was like 20 exactly. years ago. Yeah, so great.
I was literally in the mid-90s. But, you know, my brother, of course, was always the elder statesman in the punk rock circuit, pretty much. As he said, I was born old, so you know, whatever. It was in Austria, I believe. I mean, they were teasing us, I think.
Such a great cover, though. Like, even like, I was thinking when I looked at that the other day and revisited it, that like, punk rock bathrooms were like the original Twitter. Just somebody would just post, like, carve into the wall, like, fuck this person or whatever.
And it's cool that you captured that and actually like turned it into art as
Oh
well.
yeah, we took a photo and made fun of it for sure.
Yeah.
It was actually a backstage. It was a green room.
Oh, okay,
Yeah,
cool. Yeah.
backstage, and I can't remember. I believe it was in Austria somewhere.
Yeah,
Maybe
that's
Linz.
yeah, that's hilarious. And yeah, even right now too, you guys are about to like tour the West Coast and everything. How's it like kind of like getting in the groove with these Dead Bob tunes? Are you excited to like play them in front of an audience?
Oh yeah. I mean, it was a bit, as you said, playing at that level, and yeah, I mean, when it became obvious the pub closed, it was had this record out, I was like, okay. Some of the, well, most of the people that are playing with me now helped out with that record. Ford Pier, for instance, he's been around forever. I've done a lot of music with him in different situations, with the Showbiz Giants. We were both on one DOA album, and I did some
Nice.
drumming for his original material. He's put out lots of material. He wrote the text for That Was Too Easy to help me finish that song, and Byron Slack from the Invasives. If you're not familiar with that band, amazing band. Great band. They're from Surrey. I have no idea why they aren't a lot more popular. And they were kind of like, they had that, they came out in 2003, and I think they just kind of missed the 1990s grunge and sort of new punk wave. I'm
Ah,
not sure,
yeah.
but Invasives, check them out.
Cool,
Awesome.
cool.
And Byron is, for instance, drummed in the Hanson Brothers with us. He's a drummer. In the Invasives, he's the main writer and guitar player. And Invasives played with No Means No a lot of times, and the Hanson Brothers touring with us. His partner, Christy Leodette, I only just met through Byron. And when I was trying to get this Lifelike finished, and she's a horn player and a guitar
Cool.
player, keyboard player, and she's just a multi-instrumentalist,
She's a
talented.
Swiss Army knife of punk.
Oh yeah, and yeah, and can cut like one too. So great. It was really a pleasure to meet her, and she came up and did a little horns on that song, No Tomorrow.
Cool.
So I get rid of the digital horns and put real stuff down,
Nice.
and then so both of them are playing with me. And then the bass player is Colin McRae, who is from Victoria as well and from the punk rock scene there, about 10 years behind us, but in a band called he was in a band called Pigment Vehicle, and they were pretty act they were a very active band, put out three or four releases, and yeah, toured across Canada a bunch of times, played a bunch with the Dayglows, although they were crazy, they were even more sort of proggy rock than No Means No.
Oh, yeah.
Just very, very creative and very interesting. But he was the bass player, and
Cool.
so he was a good bass player, but he hadn't and he lives here, and he was one of my partners at the pub. I reacquainted with him when I moved up here, and we got involved in a bunch of stuff together outside of music, and but he wanted to get back in, and so he hadn't really picked up his bass for 25 years. And but we started rehearsing, and since we can rehearse together here, and everyone else lives down on the Lower Mainland, it was very good for us. So for me to start playing again, but that was the question: can I do this at the level that I want to be able to do at it? That's just the way I play. And I'm turning 63. No, 62
Oh,
today.
cool. Oh, really?
Yeah, today's my
Today's your
birthday.
birthday? What? Oh, you're spending it with me? Oh, happy birthday, man.
Yeah, so that question is like, can you play at the level you want to play at, and how is it going to go? I mean, I have to admit, I felt a little like, okay, the people who are going to come out to see us are going to be all the No Means No fans. I mean, first, for 99%, and everyone's going to be super excited, and I don't want to pat myself on the back, but the bar was that bar is set pretty high.
Yeah.
I was definitely, it was on my mind. Are we going to be able to pull this off? Are we going to be able to do a good show? And it's different than No Means No, but will people enjoy it? And it all went well. We did 9 shows in British Columbia last November, December. They all went really well. They were really well attended. The big shows were as big as they should have been, and the little shows were fun and still packed. And so, we all felt, okay, we got something going here. It's working. Let's just keep working at it and getting better. We're headed off to Winnipeg in March.
Nice, nice. Yeah, that's a beautiful thing too. And I guess, like, as a final question too, like, I always love to, like, when I talk to a legend like yourself, maybe give some perspective to maybe like a younger band listening to you and sees you at 62 years old, like today, and like just idolizing that and wanting to be that and do that with their life. Would you have any advice for like maybe like a teenage band in their garage to who wants to set on like a journey like yours?
What would be the advice? Well, it was, if you want to really stick to your guns, it's going to be a long road. And I really suggest that you get a trade.
Yeah, you have a backup, especially in punk,
because there's no money in it, and not for the majority of people. And we did okay. I'm not a wealthy man, but we made a living at it. But that was, No Means No pretty much didn't pay ourselves for about 10 years of playing music all through the 80s. It was finally when Wrong came out, we got over to Europe, then we were starting to draw some big crowds. Like I said, it took until we went to Europe and came back that suddenly, and Wrong made a big splash. So that was a lot of years of just playing and playing. So if you're not playing for because you're having lots of fun doing it, you're probably not going to enjoy yourself. But if you really enjoy playing music and writing and playing by yourself or with a band, with your friends or whatever, you're playing for yourself first and foremost. And that never really changes, at least not for me. I'm only doing this because I'm having fun. And it was never an idea of resurrecting No Means No. It's not No Means No 2.0. I wouldn't be doing this unless I was happy with new music. Sure, of course, there's, some No Means No stuff there. And we played some No Means No songs live, of course. I don't deny where I came from. And I still love all that shit. This is about Dead Bob playing new music and other music that I've written. It's not, collaborating with my brother or Tom or Andy. And also now with Ford and Byron and Christy and even Colin, we got a lot of songwriters. So when I say that I've got still 2 more albums in the pocket, sort of, well, one anyway, the other one is lots of songs, but as I said, in different stages of completion. Now we got other songwriters, and now these people are we haven't even started to explore ourselves as a band of 5 individuals. We're just working through the back catalog of myself.
Yeah.
So we haven't even got there yet. I don't know where that's going to go.
That's exciting times though,
And I'm not afraid to do anything. I know I'm kind of stretching this out, but
it's all good.
One thing I do, like, I have my kids are in their 20s and I listen to some of the music they're listening to and it's all over the place. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's great because I like to be all over the place. Our shows aren't just, I'm encouraged to think that we can proceed and our shows can really change. Mm. It doesn't have to be the same thing all the time.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like back when I was younger too, like lots of people would identify themselves as a genre, like, oh, I'm a metal guy, I'm a punk guy, I'm a hip hop guy. But now everybody listens to everything, and that's cool. And like reflection to like your new album too, it is a lot of everything too. And I definitely recommend everybody to check that out too. It's just like, if you love music, you're gonna have a fucking good time.
Well, Ford, who is in school, he started out as a French horn player. His father is a trombone player, was a music teacher. And Christy is an excellent trumpet player. So Ford, has decided to take up the trombone. So I'm super excited because now we got trumpet and trombone going on. And this is for me incredible fun because I love horns, and when the horns come in, it just changes everything.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
Very,
exciting
very have
times.
lots of fun with
Yeah,
that.
hell yeah, hell yeah. Well, it was an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thanks for hanging with us on your birthday and everything. And yeah, I just want to say too, I hope sometime you guys can tour in Toronto, because right now there is a very, very healthy punk scene going on right now. And yeah, you could just pretty much if you got a bunch of these bands as an opener, you would fill any venue right now. So that's a cool thing going on right
Awesome.
now.
Great. Well, thanks so much. Looks like we have to cut things off. I've got to talk to someone else.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Sean, for having me on.
Yeah, no
And
problem. And
birthday, what I do for my birthday, I'm talking to four different people. That
yeah.
was awesome.
Well, right now I'm gonna have a shot in your honor, and hope you have a great
There
day, eh?
you go. There you go.
Yeah, take care, John.
I'll be doing
Peace.
that around the fire this evening.
Yeah, let's go.
All right. Thanks so
Take
much,
care.
Sean. You
Anytime,
too.
man.
Bye.
Thank you once again to John for joining us on the show. Like we mentioned, Life Like, the album, it's out now, streaming everywhere. And also, he's been touring with Dead Bob on the west coast of Canada. Sounds like they're going to keep the momentum going with new songs, albums, and they might even come to your town. And before we go, like always, we got to give a special thanks to everybody over on our Patreon page, going the extra mile, supporting the show. And first up, biggest thanks to Mike Carniello of the Testing with Mike YouTube channel. If you're into technology, electronics, how they work, and most importantly, how to fix them, go check out Testing with Mike on YouTube. Another huge thanks to Amanda McKnight of Top 10 Nerd. Beyond being the host of Top 10 Nerd, talking to millions of subscribers, Amanda has her very own YouTube channel that I totally recommend. Type in Amanda McKnight on YouTube, you can find it. Soak in some good vibes and learn about comic books, video games, movies, and all things nerdy. That's Amanda McKnight on YouTube. Another big thanks to the wonderful Jenny Potter, the legend Devin McBride, back-to-back Allen's Double Impact, the number one gent Alan Kent, and big wig Alan Briggs with a very generous donation. And another thanks to our favorite soul singer, Saber, and last but not least, Francis Coffer, aka my mom. If you want to shout out at the end of every episode and also get these episodes early, raw, uncut, right when I'm done the Zoom call, I just post them. You can go to patreon.com/thecreativeimbalance. And beyond having our thanks, you can just go to bed at night and sleep soundly, knowing you're a badass motherfucker who supports raw, uncut, independent media. And nobody can take that away from you. You hear me? With that being said, we got so many shows coming your way. I don't know if you noticed, I went from doing one a week to three a week, and there's a huge backlog on the Patreon if you want to get them early. Lots of fun things happening. We're being featured at Comic-Con by the Canadian Podcast Awards. Excited to be there. So come out on March 15th. I'll be at the booth from 11 to 1 p.m. Say hello, give me a high five, and I got a raffle going on that you can enter for free. So yeah, appreciate you guys listening, and we'll catch you sooner than later. Ciao.